listener production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
Hello and welcome to Faux Fop. I'm Charlie Clawson and my guest this week is a comedian, Cam Knight. I just saw you pause. You're going to do a sync clap at the start of the show.
I was. I thought that's what you were doing because you were sort of laboring over the one, two, and I just thought that was the level of professionalism that you held with Faux Fop, but clearly you don't.
You are adorable. Toe Fop and Faux Fop, by extension, have graduated to a new level of professionalism where the medium we record on, the platform, Riverside, it does a digital countdown. Did you not see the counting down, the 3, 2, 1?
I did.
But I appreciate you bringing that level of professionalism to the show. Just before we started, you pointed out you've got a Jumanji board game behind you. Is that – okay, so a couple of questions. Because I'm
real. Every time we play it, we get transported to a jungle where everything wants to kill or eat us to death, Charlie. It's horrific. We've only played it once, and I only just came out of it after my son's birthday.
That explains
week.
The ponytail. How long were you gone for?
Yeah, I went in clean cut. I came out with this hair. Yeah, I've been in there for years, man. I lost so much of my time. I'm 72.
I'm just going to turn your microphone down a little bit because you are coming hot, but that's fine.
I'm coming in hot. I'll back off.
No, that's good. That's good. No, so Jumanji, though, because I'm not overly familiar with Jumanji lore. I don't think I've ever seen the original one. I've seen the rock ones. But was Jumanji a game and then they turned that into a movie like, you know, Monopoly, they turned into a movie, or did the game come from the movie?
No, I think the game came from a mystical place.
Okay, hang on.
Somebody dug it up.
Wait, hang on.
Is it a movie tie-in?
Or
no, man, look, the movie is based on real events, Charlie. Didn't you see that at the start of Jumanji? It said based on a true story.
Sure, yeah.
It actually happened to Robin Williams.
Right, so you Kirsten Dunst, because you would have been about Kirsten Dunst's age when the original film came out, so was that based on you? And so who was Robin Williams in real life?
It was the actual guy, whatever his name is in the film.
Right. Okay. So you were a kid and a guy popped out of your board game.
Hang on a minute. Isn't Robin Williams the original kid who went in and went missing for years?
You know what, Cam? I'm going to do a tried and true Toe Fop fallback, and I'm going to go to Jumanji on Wikipedia because I have not seen the original film. I don't know what the fucking plot is. I mean, imagine it's the same thing. People get sucked into a game, right?
I'll tell you what happens. This kid whose father is a shoemaker, he got in a bit of trouble with his dad.
Alan Parrish is his name.
He got chased by bullies. And then he finds this game, he plays this game, he gets sucked into the game and he disappears forever. And his family grieved so heavily that their business collapsed and all this sort of stuff. You don't really find that out until later on. And then the game
gets lost somehow.
He gets lost, I guess, and then is found again when this other family buy the mansion.
26 years later, Judy and Peter Shepherd move into the now vacant parish mansion.
Yep, and these kids play the game and then out pops Robin Williams, who is that boy. He's been in there for that long. He's grown a beard and he's like an angry Peter Pan.
Right.
Essentially.
Right. Okay, yeah. Okay. So it was based on a book. That's what Wikipedia is telling
me. Based on a true story. No, you can't. You're reading that wrong. It's a true story, Charlie.
It's based on the unofficial autobiography of Cam Knight, who was a prepubescent Kirsten Dunst in real life.
I think what you were originally questioning me about was whether or not it was a game or a movie first, and I can't answer that. But I think this is the low-rent version of the game. I didn't know it. There's a way more expensive one out there that has like a leather-cased casing, and it looks legit, you know. And I think there's a, you know, that the green orb in the middle of the game that tells you what the riddle.
Nah.
I think that's like battery powered.
Okay.
But this one, there's this green thing. It's like, this one's really hard, by the way, Charlie. I played this with Archie and I'm so glad that he can read now, because you have to pull this card out and there's this weird lettering in green, and then you slide it underneath this green screen plastic.
Oh, yeah.
And the riddle is revealed.
Oh, right.
And even with my glasses on, I cannot for the life of me read the riddle. Like, I need Archie's fresh eyes. He's up there and he can read every single one of them. And then you have to guess based on a panel of different things what the riddle is alluding to, like adventure or a chasm or marauders or something like that. And you roll the dice and, you know, it's a dice game essentially on a board.
Right.
But I can't read the bloody thing. Like, Archie could just make these things up. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know if we've played the game properly. All I know is I nearly died.
So Iona has just started getting into board games, and so we went and got a couple of classics. We got Connect Four and Hungry Hungry Hippos.
Yes.
Which it was weird because we sort of just put Hungry Hungry Hippos together and we just dumped the marbles and we started, like, going at it. And then I was like, this seems dumb. Like, this, I don't understand what the point of this is, because it's just like this random, like, there's no skill involved. There's no gamesmanship. It's just like, make the hippo eat. And so I was asking Jim, like, what are the rules of this? And she kept, like, dismissing me. Like, I kept getting dismissed, Cam. She was like, it's Hungry Hungry Hippos. Try and eat as many marbles.
It is what it says on the box, yeah, Charlie. Yeah. Hippos are hungry. They're eating. Just make them eat.
Make them eat. You know? But
yeah,
then
I
went on YouTube because I typed in, like, rules of Hungry Hungry Hippos or Hungry Hungry Hippos tutorial. And there's actually two sets of ways of playing it. There is the beginner's level, which is, ironically, I think the harder version, which is you drop one ball into the Hungry Hungry Hippos and you go after it. And then the advanced level is you put all the balls in at once. But I reckon I've been trying to get Iona to play.
I love the fact you're such a, just before, I'm going to interject here. You are such an actor. Like, you want to know what the hippo's motivation is.
And it's
like, it's hunger.
It's nothing to do with acting. It has to do with, you need to know what the rules of a game are so you can play the goddamn rules. Although I do forget that I'm playing against a toddler most of the time.
It's a child.
So it doesn't fucking matter.
I don't care.
Like, the rule is she wins. That's what I have.
Yes, exactly.
Which really bugs me that, like, I have to let her win. Yeah, because I think it's, I worry sometimes that I'm not sort of, I'm teaching her enough resilience that, like, the world's not always going to let her win. So sometimes, the problem for me is I think sometimes I grapple with my own upbringing, which was, you know, not only was it like a different time, but I was also raised Catholic, and there's this level of kind of like oppression to Catholicism where, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Oh, wait till I tell you about, like, the child molestation. It's going to blow your mind.
Are you kidding me?
In the Catholic Church.
What? They're Christians.
But you're a dad. You'll understand what I'm talking about. Like, when we were kids, and this is going to make me sound a million years old, and so if there's any younger listeners, I'm sorry, but I know I'm Gen X, but I'm going to sound boomer as fuck here. But when I was a kid, you got presents.
Back in my day.
You got presents.
Back in my day.
You got presents on your birthday and Christmas, and that was fucking it. Like, that was it.
Man.
Maybe if, you know, a relative or a family friend came. Oh, go on.
Yeah,
you got another one,
or if you were like, if you went on holiday somewhere, and you went out shopping and you kind of begged for a holiday present,
like
a memento.
Yes, yeah,
you know what I mean.
Like, if you're in Hawaii, you might get one of those sharks where you pull the trigger and the
can
shark's
of
mouth.
Spam. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And there'd always be some kid who comes back from your primary school and he's been to Japan. He's got like a digital watch and you'd be like, whoa, what kind of witchcraft is this? The numbers are electronic. So my point being.
That's like a Swatch. The Swatch watch was our era. That was, you know. Everyone wanted a Swatch watch.
But that's what I'm saying is everyone wanted a Swatch watch. Like, I remember those rich kids at my school who would holiday overseas on school holidays, and they'd always come back from America or like Japan or somewhere with something like we'd never seen before. I remember one kid came back. Do you remember those key rings you could get that would make sound effects? Like, you press one button, it's a machine gun. You press another sound effect, it's a motorbike revving. Like, I remember.
Yeah, I had a fart one.
Yeah,
I just had a fart one.
I remember a kid coming back with one of those and, like, in grade 5 and us being like, holy shit, man, like that's a machine gun. Like
look at this technology. And now it's just laughable in the shadow of the new like Apple Vision Pro, you know? Like we're marveling at farts on buttons.
So yeah. My argument is that, you know, maybe 3 times, 4 times tops a year you're getting presents. But now it's like presents all the goddamn time. And look, I understand. Ayanna is an only child, and so there's a tendency to spoil and stuff. But I also think there is a default mechanism, and it's not just, you know, in our household. I think it's most parents where there are so many toys. Like you go to a supermarket, you go to a newsagent, you go there. Like there's always something that a kid can – that catch a kid's eye and for them to say, can I have that? And you know what? Sometimes it's fucking $5. And if it's going to give you half an hour of like peace, yeah. You'll be like, yeah, sure, you can have that. But now – we have like these buckets filled with fucking junk and shit that she doesn't even care about, that she doesn't play with. And I'm trying to put my foot down, but I'm losing this battle because, look, I think ultimately, you know, part of me, you know, agrees with it. Like, fuck, you know, why not? Like, why not make her life feel special and stuff? But then the other day, like she woke up and the first thing she said to me was, can we get a toy? Like that was the, like in my, the way I grew up, like there was no way that would have even entered my thought. You could dream about maybe getting a remote control car or skateboard or something, but you knew you had to wait till your birthday or Christmas.
Yeah. I wore all of my toys out. It's really actually quite interesting because I kept all of my original Lego and a bunch of old Matchbox cars and stuff. I don't know, for some reason Mum and Dad just kept it at their house because I just said, can I please just hold on to this stuff? Because it was just the only things that I had, you know, and I just wore them out essentially, but they kept them. And now that I've had my own kids, my parents gave them back to me. So my kid's first Lego set was my old Lego set. And I thought in my head, I was like, oh yeah, I had a massive Lego set. It was this huge Lego bag. And then Mum and Dad brought it over and it's just, it's bullshit. It's like nothing. Yeah. And my kids have already got about 20 times the amount of Lego that I ever owned. And considering this too, like we, you know, I mean, I'm divorced now. And so they have two homes to live in. They have two bedrooms to fill. They have two play spaces to fill with toys. And so they have two types of everything. They have soft toys for her own bed at her house. They have them for my house. So my kids are doubly spoiled from that as well. It drives me out the wall. Well, and I don't know what to do about it because I'm the same. I like to – sometimes I'm like you. I go, oh, yeah, it's only $5. Like I took my kids bowling on the weekend, which, by the way, I walked out of there like $85 down just to go bowling. But there was an arcade in the bowling alley as well. It's this really cool 50s bowler. It's just over in Botany. It's great, right? The bowling itself just for one game for the three of us cost me like $50 or something or $40 or something. And then my kids wanted to play in the arcade and it was one of those arcade things where you play those games and it gives you those stupid tickets
tokens.
You got to collect the tickets to get something. So they ended up getting a bunch of tickets. They thought it was amazing. They got like, I got 260 tickets, Dad. This is great. What can I get? And it's like, you know what you can get, man? You can get landfill. That's what you can get, buddy. Like you're going to get something that is just going to end up just being underground longer than you ever will, or you can get a bunch of
said to your kids.
I know this is all muttering to myself. Oh, right. Like a late on the counter and just saying, worry. "Can I?
You'll be long dead before
Yeah, get that stress ball dice, kiddo. Get it. Yeah, I need it. Daddy needs it. Like I was just kind of doing my head in a little bit, going, "God damn it! They just the amount of just superfluous stuff that they have that they get, you know, on a whim or even now just with Kinder surprises or whatever. There's just all these tiny little bits of plastic that we've got in our house that we don't need.
Yeah. I got a bunch of those. And Iona's just getting into Lego now. We actually went to Big W yesterday to get her like some – we thought we needed to get we should get the Duplo because that's, you know, she's a bit younger, the bigger block ones. But yeah, then she saw
– Lego. Is that what we called it? Remember, did you call it? Veggie Lego, because I had to do veggie. I did veggie maths.
Yeah, me too.
School. Yeah, did you?
Yeah, but we weren't given Lego. My veggie maths must have been a lot more advanced. You were real. You were veggie maths.
Yeah, we were just actually legitimately just counting Duplo boxes. Yeah,
were you really?
No. So you're going to get Duplo? You don't think she's as dexterous?
Well, we're going to, but then we took her down the Lego aisle and she saw a Frozen, you know, diorama, and then, you know, that was it. We had to get – we got the Frozen one.
But yeah, cool.
That's sort of part of the thing is, like, you know, I just – I wonder if it just makes it less special. Like, I look at all her toys and I look at, you know, the toys you can get now, and I'm like, oh, my God, imagine being fucking 8 years old now, and just what, you know, what you could get your hands on and the stuff you can play with. Like, the toys are so advanced and they're so great. But then at the same time, there's so much of it. It's kind of like, yeah, she's spoiled for choice. And I'm like, I just want to, you know, you sort of give your kids those experiences, you know, like horse riding or whatever, like that has nothing to do with material possessions and stuff. But ultimately, the thing that's really going to hook them in, because, you know, you've got marketing companies getting paid millions of dollars to lure them in, is Kinder Surprise, Happy Meal, all that kind of stuff. And, I mean, I remember meeting, chatting, I worked with this director who lived in the States, and I went over to visit him and his wife, and they had two kids. And I noticed when I walked into their house, they had no TV. And I was like, oh, well, that's weird. You're a TV and film director. You don't have a TV. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'll watch things on my laptop and stuff. But, you know, if I need to, you know, do a grade or whatever, I'm going into a grading suite. So it doesn't matter if I'm watching it on a small screen, if they're just sending me, you know, dailies and stuff. And I said, what about your kids? And he's like, yeah, they don't really ask to watch it. And I'm like, so what are they doing? And he's like, oh, you know, like, they write plays and, you know, one of them, Eli's learning the piano, and, you know, so-and-so paints and stuff. And I'm like, but they don't complain or bitch and moan or, you know, talk about their friends. And they're like, oh, you know, occasionally comes up, but, you know, they genuinely get into what they're doing, the music or the arts and crafts or whatever it is.
How do they do that? So they mustn't have introduced them to television from an early age, obviously.
Because
I don't know how to wean mine off. Like, they're not on it heaps, but to I have to stagger it with them, and we have to talk about time frame and how long they're going to do this, or if they, my kids love computer games now, and they, you know, they play my PlayStation, they play kids' games on the PlayStation and stuff like that. Archie's obsessed, loves it, but I still have to stagger that out. But then when I'm trying to encourage them to then go and do other things, to do reading, to do art, to do craft, to play with the millions of toys that they already have, it's, or it still is like this effort. Like, I've found, man, I've found myself, I'll go into my sunroom, which is their play den, and I'm in there by myself playing with the Lego because it's fucking better than any Lego I've ever had. My friend gave me like so much Lego at Christmas time because their kids don't play with it anymore, and he gave me all the workbooks and stuff, and my kids have only built like two things out of it. One of them was a goddamn Hogwarts castle, mind you. Like, he gave me some really epic gear and like hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of free Lego, and I'm the one in there. I'm in there going, yeah, man, I'm going to piece this together. This is so cool. Thinking my kids will follow me in, and they just
they don't.
They
don't. They play video
games. It's like, dad'll do it.
I'm the same with what's it, the Connex building blocks, you know, the magnetized building blocks where it's like, I love that. Like, I will beg Iona to play that with that so I can do it. And I often will be left on the floor for like an hour on my own building some construction long after she. But that's what I mean about if I was a kid again, I would love what is available now. But I just sort of, I mean, I don't, the TV thing is analogous, right? It's like, well, once the cat's out of the bag, it's not like we can suddenly
pull it away
and now say, yeah, you only get presents twice a year. Because it's just going to seem like we're, or can we? I don't know. Can you do it?
I don't know. I mean, can
we play good dad, bad dad? Can you come up and be like bad dad? So I'll just be like, oh, geez, I know, you know, I really don't want to take this away, but Cam's here and he's just sick of kids getting toys all the time. Then you can kick the door in.
Take everything out. Yeah. Yep, this is coming with me. Bad dad, come away. Look out. Bad dad coming through. You can start pretending to cry for her as well.
Oh, well, that's so uncool, man. What a bummer. Oh, no.
Diorama, not the Frozen diorama.
Why would he do that? Crazy.
And then I accidentally do take the magnets and you do start crying. Yeah.
Hey, you mentioned before, and it just caught my ear, the new
the
Apple.
Jumanji was real.
No, yeah, you mentioned that. The Apple, that Apple virtual reality headset, what's it called?
Have you seen the 9-minute video online about it?
And so tell me, I literally saw it last night, so I have not debriefed. Is that legitimately what it can do? Like,
apparently so, yeah. I was kind of concerned about it when I first saw it because I Well, partly because I went, this is just a Black Mirror episode coming to life and the world's going to end. But then also the VR technology in it now is incredible, because usually when you've got VR and you look around, everything looks around with you, but you can open screens up and then look to your left and that screen will stay locked exactly where it is.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's phenomenal. But, yeah, it looks like
it was such a dystopian video, wasn't it? Because the way they were framing it and marketing it was like, it's a dad at home and he's like making dinner for the kids and
hanging around,
you know,
on the couch.
And his daughter kicks a soccer ball and he's like, boo, I can, you know, and I'm just like, this is horrifying. Like,
I know. But look, you can go to the moon. You could go anywhere. You can watch a movie on the moon if you like and immerse yourself in 3D photographs with your children. Everything's fine. And so part of me is like, this is incredible technology. This is amazing. But then a part of me is sitting there going, this is Black Mirror and WALL-E smooshed together. What the fuck is going to happen to humanity? I'm not sure.
Well, considering when you look at the reality of, like, you know, the house of living crisis, wages have stagnated, you know, climate crisis, who the fuck would rather be here than in a virtual world where you can traverse to any place? It's Ready Player One. It's everything you just named.
It is,
like, it's all those dystopian.
It's pure escapism. But for $3,500, it's pure escapism.
That's right. So I've just found this article from NPR. Apple moves into virtual reality with a headset that will cost you more than $3,000, and I think that's US. Apple on Monday unveiled a long-rumored headset that will place its users between the virtual and real world while also testing the technology's trendsetter ability to popularize newfangled devices after others failed to capture the public's imagination. I guess they're talking about like Oculus Rift and Google Glasses and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Tim Cook said...
Go on. They were so quiet about this launch too. Like there was nothing coming up. Like no one said anything about anything. They had to, how's this? Apparently they had to put down 5,000 different patents for this thing over however many years they've been working on it. 5,000 different technology, new technology patents. Like it's astounding.
So you're saying there's 5,000 independent bits of innovation or technology have gone into this device.
Yeah, available in
this
now.
Fucking aliens, man.
It's fucking aliens.
Landed and they handed over this advanced tech.
This is it, man. It's on. It's happening. Meanwhile, Zuckerberg's going to be the only one in his little fucking $400 VR set jerking off over some 16-bit set of tits while we're all in this fucking reality, Uber Apple reality.
It's so weird, though, like how quickly... Because you're right, like the fact that they held off on the announcement, it seemed to come from nowhere, and all these patents, it feels like it. I don't know why it feels sinister. It should be exciting.
It should just be. Hey, how good's humanity? Isn't this amazing? We built this. Like that's what.
It's just
that's
because
what
you have no faith.
She's like, I'm excited, and I was like, I'm excited that you're excited. I'm happy that you're excited, but I find this kind of terrifying for some reason, and I don't know why, and I can't explain it, but I am. I'm just sort of scared of it. And she's like, well, that's because you're older than me. You're old. You're one of those. I've shifted into that bracket, Charlie, where anything new, I'm just going to go, no. You know, I don't want this.
Well, I guess it's because look what happened with social media. Like we are a rare generation in that, you know, we existed in a time, we were mature enough in a time pre the internet to understand what a pre- and post-internet world looks like and the differences between the two. And one of the things that came in our lifetime was social media, and we know where the fuck we are there with social media and how destructive. I mean, obviously some good things as well, but ultimately in terms of kind of attention spans, like mental health, you know, it's documented. Social media has been terrible, and we just kind of released this thing all excited about the technology and it's going to connect us all and blah, 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 blah. And now we're sort of like, oh, maybe we should have like done a slower rollout and just tested all this kind of stuff. So the cynicism and the reluctance, I reckon, comes from a sense of when has technology been rolled out that hasn't been immediately co-opted by nefarious forces? You know what I mean? Like even if a cure for cancer came out, there'd be some way of twisting that medication and like, oh, it actually sterilizes entire populations and it would be used for that, you know. There'd be some horrible application because that's what we do. It's like, you know, there was a video that went viral a couple of days ago about, you know, the RBA raising interest rates and the difference between, you know, what the world was like 30 years ago in terms of average income, average house price, long and the short of it being that, you know, 30 years ago, you'd have to sort of save three times your yearly income in order to save the deposit for a house. And then, you know, the way to pay off that house was much faster. Now it's like 10 times. Like the cost of a house is virtually impossible for anyone on like a below average wage. And so you think about like, well, there seems to be, you know, some solutions we can take there, which is like, well, maybe we look at negative gearing and maybe rather than having multiple investment properties. Yeah. But you know what happened in the 80s?
Maybe I should go and live in a board game for 26 years. Yeah.
Wait this shit out. Wait this shit out. But you know that people take advantage. So obviously in the 80s, you know, people started buying investment properties and, you know, using negative gearing to their advantage. And that's what's happened. And so with this virtual reality helmet, you just like, it's not like this shit is getting developed and then handed out globally for the betterment of mankind. It's got a fucking $3,500 price tag, which means only a certain class of people are going to be use it, which means only a certain class of people decide how to exploit this. And it's certainly not going to be for the good of humanity, is it?
Not really, no. And I
say that to your bloody girlfriend.
I wonder how much patronage of cinemas is going to go down too, because you can just sit in a real world 3D IMAX movie in your lounge room if you want.
It it's already is.
Like also, if you had that headset and I had a headset, right? We can take a 3D and we've got like a 3D image camera. We can do a 3D image camera of our bodies, and then you and I can sit together and watch this movie together, and I can look over and see you. It looks like you're actually sitting next to me in this movie as well. And when you talk to me, it's real time. It's the way the speakers work make it feel as if you are just there. And the only thing you can't do is do a casual yawn and reach around and give me a cuddle. Like
I'll try. Don't you worry. at my place, there'll be a dummy. Like it'll be a mannequin with a crude face drawn on it and cam scrawled across its chest and lipstick. And I'll just gently reach over and give it a kiss.
Yeah.
But it's just, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Like that all these sci-fi films and dystopian literature has kind of been telling us where we're going, yet we seem to be marching towards it.
We're letting it happen.
Yeah.
And no one's doing anything about it. It's like, Happily. Oh, yeah, it's cool. Look, how cool was Minority Report? Let's make it available to households, the technology they used, you know, because that's essentially what it looks like when you look at it. And then it's – so now, okay, they're making AI bots that can do parkour better than humans and can do combat training better than humans. What, where, how is this going to aid us in any way?
I think
if we have this AI technology that is able to learn faster than we're able to learn, and then boom, we're done.
We're talking about the singularity. I mean, I think those Boston Dynamic robots, to be honest, are more, I'm not so worried about them. Like, I don't think it's going to be the Terminator future that, you know, people worry about, because it's still very inefficient to send physical, you know, robots out into a war zone, maybe for certain jobs, but it's much easier just to fucking wipe someone out with an EMP or to drop a bomb or precision drone strike. That's, I think.
Which you could probably operate with, you know, an Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah, that's right.
Totally. Oh, my God. In your own lounge room.
That's exactly right. Like the situation room would just be like all the generals.
Your bed. Yeah. It's a situation bed. Yeah.
I wonder if you're right, though. Like that actually, now this is a good idea for a sci-fi film we should make. Like a hitman who doesn't actually leave his apartment. He's just got one of those Boston Dynamic dogs with a gun on its back. And he's just got his VR, what's it called?
Vision Pro.
Vision Pro. And he's just off fucking like going, you know, done knocking on the door of a target and
that's cool. Could we get Sean Reno to star in it, and we do call it The Vision Professional?
Nice. Nice. Very good. Yeah, yeah, we now have to get the Apple to just agree to the product placement, which I'm sure.
Yeah. They love that. They love that shit, just branded content throughout the whole thing.
So, you know, this Tim Cook fella, Donald Trump once called Tim Apple, said, this marks the beginning of a journey that will bring a new dimension to powerful personal technology. Although Apple executives provided an extensive preview of the headset's capabilities during the final half of Monday's event, consumers will have to wait before they can get their hands on the device to prepare, but be prepared to pay a hefty price. Vision Pro will sell for around $3,500 once it's released in stores next year. It's an impressive bit of technology, but it was almost like a tease, said Gartner analyst Tung Nguyen. It looks like the beginning of a very long journey. Okay. All right. So maybe we're jumping the gun a little bit. Maybe that ad wasn't. Maybe that ad was, you know, like.
Hang on. Are you saying that it's not been made yet?
No, I'm just saying that the capabilities demonstrated in that commercial may not be 100% what it can do now. That ad might be saying, hey, like, you know, this is where we're headed. Like at the moment, you'll be able to check fucking email and maybe watch some TV. But whether
the
or not.
The last time I saw something like that happen, that woman got arrested for creating a tiny box that would save the world with one drop of blood. Do you remember that woman who's got that really deep voice and the blonde hair?
What are you talking about?
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
There was this American woman and she's got a really, really, really deep voice. And she siphoned millions of dollars from people to create this medical advancement where you could test for any illness in this box with just one drop of blood, and it just never worked. Like it didn't work. It was never going to work. It's too difficult. And now she's doing like 11 years or something in jail. She's got a really deep voice. She like fully deepened her voice. She wanted to appear like masculine.
Right.
Hello. And she's got, it's really strange. Hello, I'm going to save the world. It's like, man, You sound like a feminine Wim Hof. Like, what are you doing? But yeah, she's done time for that. So I don't know. Like, it would be pretty funny if they've just promised all of these things and there's nothing. Like, it's just a pair of ski goggles hooked up to an old Apple iPhone.
Well, it says instead of merely positioning the goggles as another vehicle for exploring virtual worlds or watching more immersive entertainment, Apple framed the Vision Pro as the equivalent of owning an ultra high definition TV, surround sound system, high end camera, and state of the art camera bundled into a single piece of hardware. Okay, so I guess what they're saying is unlike Oculus Rift or Google Glasses, it's not just like you're got your eyes locked into one thing, like looking at a screen.
That's another thing too, yeah. But like you can see through the glasses. So I can see my entire lounge room and then all the apps come up or whatever I'm working on, right? You actually can't, you can see my eyes, but they're not actually my eyes. It is a projection of my eyes. It takes an image from my eyes and then renders it on the front so it looks like I'm looking at you.
That's
but I'm not.
So creepy.
I know. It's so bizarre, right? But then also, this is another thing I'm kind of worried about, right? Like I know about data mining and it's happening all over the place, but with this sort of thing, we have no I kind of fear that they have eyes in my home now. You know what I mean? Like this thing is capable of collecting so much information about everything in my house. It could just see every single thing I've ever bought, books I've read, movies I watched, labels of brands of electrical appliances that I've bought. This thing is just like snapping shots all over the fucking house. And just knows everything about me. Where's all that information going? Again, imagine like just, I don't know if you would be so self-conscious like watching porn on that thing because I would feel like anybody was watching me the whole time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Even though
it would be immersive and probably pretty crazy and amazing, but I mean, just would be like, no way.
There is going to be a point, and maybe we're getting there sooner than we think, which you just have to check out, right, of technology. You know, for our parents, it would have been like, I don't know, fucking iPads or something like that. But there is just a point where you're like, this is just too much. Like it's the equivalent of having like a Neanderthal brain, you know, and suddenly someone brings you fire. It's like, I don't know what I'm looking at. And so I think, you know, I think about our kids and, you know, in 10 to 15 years, how advanced this technology will be. And it's like Archie will say, hey, Dad, you know, do you want to come see a film? And you're like, sure. And then you both get on your individual couches in individual cities and put on your fucking headsets and meet in the virtual foyer.
I think at that point, this will be weird. He'll be like, do you want to come see a film? And I'm like, yeah. And then he just touches his forehead and we're there. Because there's a fucking button in his brain. And he's like, boo! And then we both just sort of collapse on the floor. And we're just like this heaped mess on top of each other. And we've just we're comatose, but just living in this cinema world in our brains that it's created.
But maybe this is like, you know, you've heard of Human Beings 2.0. Like maybe this is what we're meant to do. Like maybe we are meant to evolve into digital forms. Like maybe the technology will get so advanced.
I don't know.
And, you know, I mean, it won't be us, but, you know, they'll be able to – I mean, they can already in the same way that ChatGPT, you know, can comb the entire internet to create sentences and write songs and poems and all that kind of shit. Like it won't be – it can't be too far away where, you know, an AI will be able to take accumulative totals of – everything that you've said or written or, you know, every bit of data available of you online and created, you know, a virtual Cam Knight that could be uploaded, you know, to somewhere. And then after you die, your kids or your grandkids can still converse with a virtual version of you. I mean, that's
cool. I like that. That's lovely. But then on the flip side of that, what if that
– is that lovely? I don't know if it is. I think it's a bit
– I do like the idea of being able to step inside some photographs and looking at my kids and hear – or a video. Say I took a video of them when they were little. So they're going to be like 21 or when they're older and I'm old and I'm reminiscing and then I can look at this thing and step in and it's visceral and it's like to hear their voices as children again and to almost like be able to – touch them, that it's I think that'd be absolutely incredible. What I don't want is for this technology to take a snapshot of my life, of what it thinks I am, who I am, and then decide to give me what it thinks I want to make me happy, because I'd still want free will. Like, do you know what I mean? When it just says, here, I could immerse yourself in all of this, lose yourself in what I can provide you, like a god, I guess, and I still would want to step out of that and just go, hang on, and you're still, to me, just a computer game, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I was going to make a prediction, but who knows what will happen in our lifetime, but I don't think they're...
We've come so far. Look at what the stuff we had to play with. We used to play with fucking Frogger and Pong and,
yeah, I guess.
And Double Dragon, and now look where they are.
But it's
wonderful.
If this planet becomes uninhabitable, like say in 200-300 years, you know, where climate change is out of control, like maybe this – because we are such a unique species, at least from what we know in our galaxy, in our solar system, you know, that we are the only planet that is habitable. By life.
Habitable.
But maybe that we're not meant to be. Like if you look at where we sit on, you know, in terms of like what do they call it, the cosmic calendar, like the, you know, the, if you look at the.
We're nowhere.
Like we are a blip. Yeah. And so maybe this form, which we take so seriously, is just meant to be like it's in the same way a caterpillar forms a cocoon. This is the chrysalis moment when we're going to evolve into data.
I thought that this was supposed to be the time when we have more of a spiritual enlightenment, where we actually open up to who we are, what if we are spiritual, if we have souls, or a connection to the universe. The idea of using something like this technology feels like we've cheated, you know?
Well, why?
I don't see how. Because I'm going to sit in an app, essentially, that's going to give me all these wonderful trippy colors swirling around me, and I haven't taken any drugs, and it's just there to make me feel mindful.
Yeah.
Did you see that in the video? In the video, it's like, and if you want to do some meditation, you know, it could be just like, if you are having an existential crisis over this technology, just don't worry. We've got this really cool animation that you can sit in, and it's like colorful leaves floating around you while music plays, and you just do a breathing exercise. It's just real-time meditation stuff. I don't know. Like,
it
don't
feels
you?
Soulless.
It does feel soulless. Haven't you felt times when you felt like you were closer to God because you took something? Or,
but I think that this know? Is. But I think this is like it's part of this. You know, the sort of the Catholic thing I was talking about before, about like, well, you've just got to tough things out. You need to, but maybe. Like if the technology makes a shortcut for someone feeling a bit more mindfulness, then maybe that's a good thing. Like I was talking to my therapist a couple of weeks ago, because I used to be like 5 years ago, I was way into meditation. Like I'd meditate every day, you know, 20 minutes a day. And, you know, I found it beneficial. But after, you know, having a kid, it just, you know, it seems like a luxury that I don't have time for, which is bullshit. I could obviously make time for it, but I just have dropped it. And so at night, I've been listening to like sleep stories, sometimes a sleep meditation, but sometimes a sleep story. And part of me was like, oh, am I cheating here? Like, is this, you know, because this is not natural. Like, you know, the cavemen didn't have like someone reading out the fucking dictionary in dulcet tones to put them to sleep. So, and I asked my therapist about it. I said, you know, what do you think about like relaxation tapes and sleep stories and all that kind of stuff? And she was just like, listen, whatever, you know, whatever works for you. Like it's entirely subjective to the individual.
Man. I go to sleep listening to a waterfall because I don't live outside near a waterfall. So I do listen to that on my app. I am reaching back to my caveman roots by listening to a waterfall, but I'm doing it on my phone because I don't want to fucking sleep outside. Right? But
do you know what my soothing sound is? The sound of a dryer.
Like,
because our laundry is outside the house, but you can sort of still vaguely hear it in our bedroom where our bedroom is positioned. Yeah. But it's because when I was a kid growing up in a house with like 9 kids, you know, real estate was within the house was pretty limited. And so
you slept in a dryer.
My sister and I had a dryer in our bedroom. And so like I have kind of memories of being in a kid, like going to bed. And then, you know, I'd be asleep or half asleep and I would like mum would sneak in with a basket of laundry and chuck the dryer on. But I do find that woo, like it's a really comforting sound for me.
It is. Yeah. I like a box fan. I like sounds of like a fan blowing as well. Like,
do you listen to it every night?
Yeah. Cause I used to, what I was doing was I was sleeping with a fan on because I have tinnitus from seeing bands like when I was younger. And it's, yeah, too much. And it's bad. So when it gets quiet, it just seeps in and it's I just focus on that and I hate it. So I was having this fan noise on and then I started feeling guilty. I was wasting electricity because I have it on in winter and I'm like, I don't need this fan. So I was just trying to find different sounds that you can go to sleep to. And I was playing around with water, but then I was scared that if I listened to water too much, maybe I'd wet the bed or something. And then so... But this waterfall, the waterfall just sounds like white noise. I was listening to like different types of noise, like white noise and brown noise. And
yeah, it's a very different sound, isn't it? Like a waterfall to just a single stream trickle into a bowl.
The trickle makes you go, I need a piss. And I'm in my 40s, man, and I do need to piss way more. You know, so it's kind of scary. So I'd put that on and go, Jesus Christ, I've got to go to the toilet again and just sit there urging a drop to come out. But the waterfall almost does just sound like white noise, and that just blankets the ringing out, which I really like. Man, you know, like I've actually started trying something different this week as well, along the meditation lines, because I have done a lot of meditation too, and I, like you, was just kind of like, yeah, I get it, I like it, but it wasn't, I don't know, there was something about it. I like doing it if I need to relax, whatever. Anyway, I started doing the Wim Hof breathing exercises. Have you ever done that?
No, but we recently did a whole episode on Wim Hof.
Did you?
Yeah.
It's full on, but I the first video that I did, I liked it, but like I was listening to him and listening to him tell me to take it, it's intense, take it, was full on, because I was like I was giggling on the floor imagining him trying to have sex with me. Take it, let it in, bring it in, put it out. It's intense. You know, I'm like, oh God, I just couldn't. I kept visualizing him naked on top of me, heaving and sweaty. So I had to find a different person doing the technique. But Charlie, man, I did it just before we did this podcast and I did it yesterday. I had an amazing session yesterday. I've gotten so much out of it. It makes me actually feel energized. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was just bullshit, and I thought, look, I want to have a go at this because I was feeling quite lethargic a lot, and I didn't know what was going on, and so I cut back my coffee. I only have like one coffee in the morning now, and I was starting my day now this week. I went, I got to do this. I start the day with yoga, and then get work done, and then, you know, around 2 o'clock or whatever, I'll do Wim Hof.
Look at you.
I know, man. I don't know who I am. I was a goddamn urchin that used to hang out at Revolver nightclub. I know, right? I get it. But I needed something else because I don't drink. I don't do drugs anymore. I'm nearly six and a half years goddamn sober, and I'm not feeling – I'm still fucking not feeling right. And so I gave Wim Hof a go. Dude – there were moments when these rushes of feelings that were coming over the top of my head and my skull reminded me a little bit of doing nitrous oxide and a little bit of like when you're coming on with like mushrooms or LSD. And I was like, this is really interesting. Like really, really interesting, but no fear attached to it or anything like that. And there's this beautiful moments of calm after the exhale where you don't breathe back in and you hold your breath at the start from 1 minute, and then the second time 1.5, and then the third time 2 minutes, and then the fourth time is 2 minutes 45. You're holding your breath for 2 minutes 45 before an inhale. And
you can hold your breath for almost 3 minutes.
Because you're hyperventilating so much, you're actually over-oxygenating your blood. So after you've done all of this hyperventilating, which makes you feel dizzy as hell, so you lie down while you're doing it, and then you finally exhale everything after 1.5 minutes of this hyperventilating, like the in, out, let it out, hold your breath then. And so on the fourth time, you are holding your breath for 2 minutes 45. And then that inhale, that you inhale again and hold it for like 15 seconds. It is so peaceful, Charlie. Like it is.
I want to do it. Where did you find this?
I'll send you the link. It's on YouTube. Send you the link of this guy.
It's just an instructional video.
A normal instructor. It's not Wim Hof.
Yeah, great.
Normal dude. There's some nice relaxing music. Get on the floor. It only goes for like 16 minutes or something. Yesterday I felt so powerful coming out of it. And I had some beautiful visuals too with my eyes shut. It was really rainbows. I almost saw like blurry, it was blurry geometrics a little bit.
Yeah,
I was
right.
I was sitting there going, hang on a minute, what is this? And this feeling of just utter calm, and then came out of that. And my body was, seriously, it was warm. I was like, I'm charged. I get now why he's like, now jump in an ice bath. Because you kind of do want to, I want to jump in an ice bath. Like you do feel kind of powerful and energized. It's bizarre, mate. Like and I've only been doing it this week, and I feel like, holy shit, I've found something real.
It's funny, the episode that we did, because we were sort of looking at it from a, like, you know, what is it and what are the health benefits, but more from a perspective of does this aid in like athletic performance, you know, is this a thing that, you know, stops disease or whatever? And the answer tends to be, well, a little bit of this and a little bit of that, like sort of not, like a lot of things. If you are someone who is already like healthy and eats well and it doesn't smoke or, you know, drinks too much or anything like that, then the benefits are going to be a lot better than someone who does all those things and then doesn't Wim Hof. You're probably not going to see, you know. So the question is, how much is like causation and how much is correlation? Like, is
I'm a skeptic about most things, like particularly this sort of stuff. Like I really am. I wonder if it's real or whatever. And I went in and I'm just like, just do it. Let's just see what happens. And it kind of changed my mind.
It's awesome.
I don't know.
I think it's good. I am 100% a believer of, if it works for you, then you should do it. Like, because I've also tried a different kinds. I think I even put you onto one of the meditations I was doing, which was more the Sam Harris one.
No, you were just, I think it was just babies screaming.
Ken, you got to listen to this. It's so relaxing.
It's so relaxing.
Yeah. It's animals in distress and babies screaming. I put it on every night.
Because
I'd been doing like whatever, I think it was Headspace, one of the kind of really popular apps. And I just felt it was a bit like whatever. And then a different therapist at the time, because I've been in a lot of therapy, said to me, take this more neuroscientific Sam Harris approach, which is Because Sam Harris's whole thing is it's all about a consciousness and what is consciousness and being aware of consciousness and separating from consciousness. And I do find it really useful, but then I'm like, oh, but it's like in a bit of the warmth, you know, a bit of the kind of hippie warmth that you get from the other meditations. And so now I've sort of, I'm dipping into like another meditation app, but I haven't found anything yet that's really kind of captured me quite like when I first started practicing. And so I think that Wim Hof, I like the sound. I think I need a bit like what you're describing is a physical sensation because.
Yeah. And I think it's physically challenging too, by the way. Like I go in a little bit trepidatious, like because it's unpleasant at the start. The hype, the breathing, it does make you feel a little unpleasant. You're heady and dizzy and it's a little bit kind of painful, I guess, a little, I don't know. Like I had a tear run down my fucking face today. It was right. Weird. When you get to like that first breath, when you're holding your breath and that's when it just sort of hits you and you go, no, this is worth it, you know. And it's kind of, it's funny. It just feels like, it's like at any time you've done some powerful psychedelic, it's the same thing. It's like, this is unpleasant. This is, I feel bad. Oh, no, this is actually amazing. But I'm just taking goddamn oxygen. It's, yeah.
So I wonder what, I mean, if we to go back to, you know, where this conversation started, like this idea that just say we do evolve into like a digital being, like some kind of super sophisticated data bank of Cam Knight's personality. So before you die, they've been able to do some kind of brain scan, which takes into account like, you know, 98% of your personality. It's 98%.
I hope they can't. I don't want them in there. They do not want to hear what goes
but
on.
But it won't be you. So this digital version of you is not you now that's talking in the podcast. It's a facsimile. It's a separate version of you. But then you die and this is the only existence you have. And so this version of you exists in a digital space that your kids can come visit and your grandkids can come visit. But I wonder if, like, you've got 98% of your own desires, if you can then go, all right, well, you know, I want to experience being high again, or I want to experience being drunk again, or I want to experience, because how do the consequences now change? Now it's a digital version of you, because there's real world consequences for you now, right? And there's a reason why you're sober. But if it was a digital version of you where you could stop it at any time by, you know, snapping your fingers and suddenly you're sober, you're like, you might be like curious about, oh, you know, I wouldn't mind tripping again. I want to trip again. And so then,
but I'm not feeling what, because there's, all I'm doing is witnessing a trip. That's like me just looking up people taking, like people.
No, because I think that
graphics on DMT.
I read this great sci-fi book called We Are Legion, We Are Bob, which is all about this dude who exactly this happens. He's, consciousness gets uploaded into this kind of server. It's like set 100 years in the future. And so from the time he dies to the time he's revived digitally 100 years in the future, the world has fallen into another world war. And he's been asked to man this space exploration to find a new habitable planet. And so he's launched off on this spaceship, and what he immediately starts doing is duplicating himself. So the novel, you start, every chapter is a different version of himself, and they're all like slightly different from one another. But he sort of describes the feeling of waking up. There's this adjustment period, but you have phantom physical form. So you feel like you've got arms and legs. And that's the hardest thing, is that, you know, he feels like he's got the weight of a body, and, you know, he can feel the weight of his head on his neck and, you know, the movement of his arms and when he's walking and stuff, but then he looks down and there's no body. So then what he does is, you know, because he has control over his own environment, he digitally creates a body for himself, you know, according to what his body looked like when he was still alive. And so,
oh, man, would you do that though?
Yes, you'd have to. Otherwise you'd go fucking insane.
I want to be a giraffe. I want to be an elephant. Like, I don't want to be fucking me. Like, I want to be like, make me into a griffin, you know, let's go.
No, I think I'd just be I'd be a slightly taller, fitter version of myself.
You and I would both.
I would turn up to meet you for lunch and I'm like, where's Cam? I just see a fucking giraffe with sunglasses on.
Yeah. We're so fucking we're insecure about our height. This body dysmorphia. We're like, no, I've got to be 6'2",
yeah,
be fucking tanned, blonde hair. Put me in a Hemsworth body.
Well, hang on. Maybe I just wanted to be a bit taller. You wanted to be in a completely new body. That's fucking body.
Yeah.
An animal's body. Now, that's complete body dysmorphia.
Half lion, half bird of prey.
I want to be a liger.
Yeah, that would be interesting, though, to be – okay, so you immerse yourself back into an old trip, but do you experience the same thing that you experienced in that trip, or is it new?
Because, well, I guess
– I don't want to experience what I've already experienced. I would like to feel –
No, it would be new because basically what you're telling the program is, okay,
feel hot.
Here is a virtual tab of acid.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put it in my virtual mouth. And then the program would be calculating, saying, oh, well, acid consists of these chemicals. When, you know, the average, male of this weight and height takes this amount of acid, then the reaction would start in his brain. And so then it would simulate for you, okay, so now the hippocampus or whatever the fuck, I don't know, whatever acid triggers is now happening. So you would have a digital trip. And then if you got comfortable at any point or weren't enjoying, and this, by the way, this is not me using some surreptitious way to get you to start taking drugs again
I'm actually starting to imagine. I'm like, that sounds kind of cool.
Because you can stop it at any point.
Mate, we've got a friend. You and I have both got a mutual friend who works at Rockstar Games. Let's get him onto it.
So we can call it virtual trip.
Talk about Red Dead and GTA, man. We want virtual trips, please.
Yeah, but the complicated part is you have to be a digital version of yourself taking the trip. I don't think you can take a digital version of the trip. That's the whole point. It's got to be the immersive experience. But it's just, I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting question. Because you won't.
Are you saying, would I do that?
Yeah, because
okay,
because the risk of addiction is going to be far. Well, I don't know. Is it less because you might come out of it and go, fuck, that was great. I'm going to do that again now.
That's
true.
I might get addicted to experiencing that. But it's not doing anything. The only thing it's doing is affecting me psychologically. It's not doing anything to my body. It's not
affecting your friends or family.
If I wanted to say, I want to experience being drunk again, I didn't have to drink a case of beer or a bottle of vodka and shit myself to experience that. Like, I'm just sitting there.
I love that.
That was too close to the truth.
I mean, it's not just getting drunk. It's like a fucking bottle of vodka and shitting yourself. I guess, though, if you're going to go hard.
Why not?
Why would you do it by heart?
I want to experience what it was like to be me in my 20s again. Let's go. But, no, I just like it doesn't have any it's not damaging your body in any way. It's just you experiencing that. Like you could say, hey, computer, just make me feel like I used to feel after I had 4 beers, because that's a good feeling.
Yeah. I want to be buzz. Hey, I just want to buzz.
Yeah, but is it busting? Have you, because it's not you. You haven't taken it.
Well, what is the definition of addiction that you abide by? Like, what's your definition of addiction?
There's the first one, which is the body's need for it, the requirement for it. If your body can't function without taking something, then yeah, your body's addicted to that. And then there is a psychological addiction to things like certain drugs, and even the psychology of being addicted to having a drink, linking a drink with like, I need that to do this. So there's physical addiction, and then there's the psychological addiction. And I think the psychological addiction is a lot harder to break, particularly with drinking. Like when you associate drinking with everything, with reward, with socializing, use it to commiserate or celebrate, it's just this thing that you're attached to separate yourself from that. Is a lot harder. I wouldn't go in and go, I don't think I'd say, hey, I want to experience drinking again. I think I'd like to let me do psychedelics again, or let me do MDMA again, or something that I think was a bit more profound of an experience.
In this sci-fi book, he can actually go into his own settings and regulate like his emotional settings, his adrenaline settings, all these kind of different, because he's been default modeled to be as close to human as possible. So having like, you know, but, you know, because he gets into these tense situations. And so he talks about going into his settings and modulating his like endorphin and dopamine release and all this kind of stuff. So you could, but I guess then you don't need the drug because.
You don't. You just,
you know, just give me a hit of endorphins, give me a release of dopamine. Yeah, and then
that's all
and
I
then
do.
That's it.
Fuck yeah. I mean, that's all I'm chasing doing this Wim Hof is I'm just a dopamine addict. I mean, I've got ADHD, for God's sakes. It's all I'm doing is just like chasing dopamine. So, you know, and that's one of the reasons, other reasons why I looked that up, because you do get this hit of dopamine, according to Wim. So, yeah, that would be so cool. Imagine doing that, adjusting your own settings. Just like, beep, beep, serotonin, beep, endorphin, beep, dopamine, beep. Testosterone, boop, you'd just be a fuck machine. Like, that would be crazy.
Well, get yourself an Apple Vision Pro and yes, you can please. Be, in Cam's words, a fuck machine. Cam,
that's the
thank you so much for coming back on FOFOP. Now, have you got dates coming up?
You know, my girlfriend lives in London, so not until she comes over in September we'll probably go out again. But, thanks for asking. I don't know. I'm doing, you know what? Yeah, I'm doing the Comedy Store in July, mid-July. I'm doing a bunch of different tours. I'll be up in Newcastle next week for part of the Newcastle Comedy Festival on the 16th. And then I'm all over Sydney. I'm just gigging all over Sydney and stuff. But the run that I'm doing next is at the Comedy Store in middle of July, which is
awesome.
Worth plugging, I guess. Well, Botlo, everyone.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Watching Botlo.
It's fucking awesome. That's doing so well. That's the web series. Is it a web series or would you say like a
– we've called it a web series. But
online series with Luke Heggie.
Online series that I do with Heggie. We need to get you on awesome it next comedians. Time you're in Sydney as well.
Yeah, fucking hell. Let's do it. Although I think next time I'm in Sydney, you're going to be in Melbourne, which is tomorrow. So it won't be tomorrow.
Right. I got a corporate. Yeah, so anyone who wants to come to my corporate tomorrow, they'd be sick. Like, corporate, that'd be great.
Come and give Cam some digital drugs. Yes, give him a digital
psychedelic.
Actually,
it's got Academy's Awards. So, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I'll be the most sober person in the room. It's so fucking weird. Everyone's going to be red-eyed and squinty. And then I'll be like, hey! I just did Wim Hof, everyone. Yeah.
All right. I've forgotten how I sign off this show. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Cam Knight. Oh, fuck, that sucked. That was terrible. I didn't know what you were doing. Hang on.
I didn't know either.
I'll do a clap.
Okay. And we're out.
Listener.